Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Sonika Garcia.
And I'm Brad Davidson. And this is Breaking the Code,
a podcast series focused on debunking the myths about the discipline of behavioral science and arming our listeners with the information they need to make sense of behavioral science and to help them apply it to their work as marketers. We are going to go back to the basics for the episode today. We're going to be talking about an internal tool used by planners and researchers that really falls into this category of research instruments. We have strong feelings about this one. So this is really a follow-up conversation from a previous episode that we had on why or your discussion guide stinks. And we can't really talk about research without talking about transcripts. So today's episode is called Conversational Transcripts Can Be Worse Than Useless. Mostly everyone will jump to thinking about transcripts when they think of a research output, right? Like it's not, you don't think about a summary deck necessarily or a recording. It's okay, where's the transcript? What's a transcript? So we want to get into, you know, what is a transcript? What purpose do they actually serve? What purpose should they serve? How do we use them in a way that maybe can be optimized a bit more? And why they often are worse than just skipping the research? Although I'm going to leave it to Brad to discuss that part.
Yeah.
Take it away, Brad. I was going to kick it over.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I don't know if they're often worse than useless, but they can be worse than useless.
Yeah.
They can be misleading. But yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh at that one.
No. So let's get into it. What is wrong with, I'm not going to say what is wrong with transcripts. There's something wrong with transcripts as they are something that's important in research.
Yeah, but they are what they are.
Yeah, they are what they are. But what is wrong with the way that we oftentimes use them?
So I think a reliance on transcripts is really, really dangerous. So I'm going to start at the end, right? I think if all you do is read the transcripts, you are probably getting a very skewed view of reality. And I will now spend the rest of the podcast explaining why. But I think it can be very dangerous to just listen to transcripts. And again, I'll start at the end. I will start with just pointing out to you that the words "I love you" can be said in lots of different ways. And sometimes they can be said in such a way that the opposite meaning is clearly conveyed, like, oh, I love you, right? That doesn't come across in a transcript. So I'm just going to throw it out there at the very beginning that you are missing most of what makes conversation intelligible when you just rely on a transcript. So I'll jump into that, but I want to pre-frame the idea because people might be having a little bit of cognitive dissonance. I think part of the problem is people have become trained to think of transcripts as a faithful representation of a conversation, and they are not, right? So let's just jump right into what a transcript is and why they are not so great. So, and again, they're not terrible. They're not useless. They just can't be used exclusively as a representation of a conversation. So here's why. All right. First off, a transcript is literally something that you've translated something, you transcribed a set of data to another format, right? So your college transcript, for those of you who went to college, or your high school transcript, for all of us who went to high school, it synthesizes your entire career as an academic into a series of numbers and grades. And it sort of obliterates a lot of the information about, did you have a good time or how long did it take you? And it just sort of shows you, like, here's my GPA, right? That's fine because in many cases, that's all you need to apply for a job or to apply for graduate school. They just want to know, what courses did you take? How did you do in them? That kind of thing, right? But inherently, the idea behind a transcript is that you've translated the information or you've transformed the information to something slightly more compressed than what you started with. Fine. That's very convenient. We don't need to know everything about, did you take, discussion group A or B in your intro lit class. I just want to know what grade you got, right? But the problem is what we lose in verbal transcripts is not trivial. In fact, what we lose often is what makes conversation intelligible, understandable. And so it makes transcripts kind of unusable or misleading in the extreme. And that's not a rare case.
Okay, that makes sense. The way that you say things obviously matters and that you can't always get that in a transcript. Are there components of a transcript that can be useful? Like where we request them for a reason, like where can we actually find value in a transcript?
Yes. Let me first go back to this statement on usable, right? Because I think that's pretty big. And then I'll tell you what's good about them. But first, I want to unpack what's lost. So we lose a lot in transcripts. Conversation is probably the most information dense kind of behavior that we engage in as human beings collaboratively. And we do it so seamlessly that we almost don't notice it. But there's things like turn taking, intonation, pacing, tone, manner, accent. First couple words out of my mouth, you know where I'm from, you know what kind of mood I'm in, you know what I'm really looking for. Right. There's things like interruptions and hesitations and repairs and just the flow overall. So here's what I mean, right? A hesitation is something like that. Very notable, right? A repair is when I start and I start going, well, okay, let me back up. A repair is when, right, that's a repair.
Right, right.
We do that stuff all the time. That gets very frequently obliterated from transcripts, but that actually tells me a lot about your mental state or about what you're thinking. Hesitations tell me a lot. Your body language, right? So for example,
You told me at one point, it was like what comes after a repair is often like the most important thing, right? They start Yeah, so that's important.
I mean, listen, when I'm doing an interview, this is what I train people. When I'm doing an interview, I listen for things like people pausing and thinking about their answer, because you get a glib. What's your favorite thing about being a doctor? I love helping patients. What's your favorite thing about this? I love that. What's your least favorite thing? Oh, well, right. All of those sort of like what we call discourse markers. Well is a discourse marker. It's sort of a space filler. But well, actually, in conversation, if you ask me a question and I say, well, what I'm signaling to you is I'm not going to give you an answer that you're going to find satisfying. Think about that for a sec. Right. So.
Right. You know, but even the way you just said it, like.
Right. Exactly.
Saying well and then saying something and then saying well and then saying something is different. But in a transcript, you're just going to see well, you know.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, I think, for example, when you think about medical transcripts, right, doctor-patient interactions that get taped, you know, there's people who do that. But there's a huge difference between your doctor looking at their EHR and talking to you and your doctor looking at you face to face with no sort of laptop open and just sort of like holding your hand and looking in your eyes kind of thing, right? Those are very different, and we get none of that information. We don't know where people are looking. We don't know the pacing, the tone, the manner. We don't know when somebody gets really, really excited. And you can hear this stuff, you know, when you interview people and they go like, well, I like this, I like this. And you go like, well, what's your favorite thing? It's like, well, my favorite thing is blah, blah. That kind of like favorite, again, that cues you in like, okay, now we're getting somewhere. All of that is lost. The other thing, right? So this is all the stuff that like paralinguistic cues or whatever you want, the stuff that is non-grammatical in the sense that it's non-structural, but it's hugely important in the way humans communicate to each other. We key off that stuff all the time. What do you want for dinner? I don't know. What's wrong? There's nothing wrong with the answer, I don't know. It's the way they said it, right? People try and put numbers on this stuff. I'm not going to try and put a number on it, but a significant amount of information is exchanged that is not grammatical and it is not lexical, meaning it's not the words, it's how you say them. Oh, I love that, right?
The other
thing is, if you've ever read naturalistic transcripts, meaning like verbatim transcripts where they don't clean them up, they appear very ungrammatical. It turns out we don't talk in full sentences. We rely so much on intonation that I can say, well, here's the, okay. But if you read that, it would be, here's the, well, and you'd be like, I have no idea what this guy is saying. It's word salad. But you actually could follow that very simply in real time because the intonation, the pacing, the pausing. If we were face to face, which for those of you listening, we are not, but if we were face to face, you would be able to see where my hands are and where my gaze is and what my face looks like and whether I'm, you know, like hunched over, sitting up straight or being defensive. These are not trivial components to how we talk. These are very important components to how we communicate with each other. And they really give us the sense of, should I believe what's being said or not? What's the level of commitment? What is your favorite thing about oncology today, doctor? Well, I really like, that's so different from like, I really like blah, blah, blah. And they're leaning in and all that. So I don't want to beat a dead horse on that one. But I just want to say, when you read transcripts, you are filling in without any cues. You are filling in your head what you think the emotional state and what we call the epistemic stance, meaning the sort of level of belief. Like, how much do you believe what you're saying? Are you just sort of going like, well, I like it, or like, well, I like it? Those things matter hugely. And when we clean up the transcripts to make them grammatical, it robs us of any chance to really understand how they felt about what was being said. All that we're left with is a bag of words, which may or may not be ironic or sarcastic or deeply committed or angry. Anything where the literal meaning is different from the stated meaning, which is very, very common, right? We often say like, oh, he, you know, she's not dumb. Well, technically, that just means she could be very dumb, right? But if we say someone's not dumb, we typically mean that they're smart, right? Or she's not rich or something. But you need the intonation to read irony. You need the intonation to read things like spontaneous negation. Look, I'm not racist, but okay, you say it that way, I'm pretty sure what's coming out of your mouth next time is going to be racist, right? But if I go like, look, I'm not racist, but that indicates that I understand that what I'm about to say is racist and I'm actually embarrassed about it, right? So just check the difference again. Like, I'm not racist, but some of my best friends, whatever, right? Look, I'm not racist, but I do believe blah, 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 right? Okay, again, do I think those are equally racist? Probably, but you can see that there's a difference in how the person speaking feels about what they're about to say, depending on the intonation.
Yeah.
That's not trivial. So So, you know, again, if all you do is read the transcripts, you get a very misleading view of the conversation. And the proof of that is anybody who's ever been handed a transcript to find, say, quotes for a pitch or a presentation or something, and then you circle a whole bunch of stuff, and then they go back and listen to it, and they go like, it actually didn't at all come across the way we thought it did in the transcript. That's an experience everyone who's listening to this podcast who's ever done like just transcript circling has had.
Yeah.
It's never the way you thought it was.
Right. That kind of brings me to the point on, obviously, best case scenario, we have the audio file and you're able to listen to the actual interview. But in most cases, what we end up getting if we didn't conduct the primary research is a high level like output deck from the research vendor, let's say. And I know I've done it, you know, well, can we get the transcripts? Because oftentimes we can't get the recording. And I don't know why that is. But I find that a lot of times we're kind of given the output deck and we're given transcripts. And then, you know, then everything that you're saying is really important, because now like we're relying a lot on transcripts to paint the full picture and we're just not able to get it. That's definitely a struggle at times. But I think so. That all makes sense. And thank you for that. I think that that's really important. A lot of the stuff on like hesitation and repairs, like I think I've definitely been guilty of like cleaning up a transcript and like just removing those terms or just like completely discounting it. And like, I'm just looking for the answer, right? And like quickly skimming it just to look for the answer. So,
right. There's a robust body of literature around how to properly create transcripts that give you all of the information I just said. It's unworkable, right? So if you were trying to transcribe intonation, tone, manner, pacing, accent, gaze, body hexis, right? Like, where are you? You know, where are you pointing to? Stuff like that. People have tried to do it. I'm just going to tell you, those transcripts make symphonic composition look simple. There's so much. When I say these are information dense exchanges, I will tell you the story of conversation analysis, which sounds like just a descriptor, but it's actually a field, CA, as they call it. And it's not very, it's kind of esoteric. And the reason is because if you sit down and try and use the CA approach to transcribe things, the full CA approach, it's insane. They wrote 700 pages on 30 seconds of a doctor-patient interaction years in the 70s, right? And it was sort of a proof of concept. But like, if you're going to do like hundreds of pages for 30 seconds, no one's going to do it, right? It's more of a proof of concept at that point, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you asked before, like, what can you get? Well, of course you can get things. You can get, first of all, you can get a sense of the vocabulary, and that's helpful. Mostly what I find helpful is more when people depart from what you expect. So I've used this example before, but I remember talking to a doctor not long ago, an oncologist, about how he felt about these platinum-based chemotherapy regimens, right? The really toxic chemotherapy that makes your hair fall out and you get anemia because it's killing your, you know, your bone marrow and stuff. And he said, oh, I just hate prescribing those medieval regimens. Now, that word medieval leapt out at me in the interview, but it would have leapt out at me in a transcript as well. And the problem with the transcript is I can't do anything about it. But I asked him, I was like, that's not a common word. Tell me what you mean by medieval. He said, I just feel like I'm torturing on them. I just feel like I'm going backwards, you know, and, you know, like there's this idea of like punishment and sort of barbarism that's baked into his use of the word medieval that came out really, really clearly, right? Yeah. That's very interesting. So I think when you start seeing words you didn't expect, that's really interesting. Or for example, when you don't see words that you expect, you know, this relies on the reader having a baseline of knowledge of what typically happens in medical conversations. But a lot of people do have that, right? But so for example, with a transcript, you can confirm a hunch. So certain words are taboo, for example. And it's interesting that even in medical interactions between a doctor and a patient, they don't get used. So here's what I mean. For example, if I go to the cardiologist, you'll see the word heart in the transcripts a lot. I'm going to listen to your heart. We looked at your heart, something like that. Same with the podiatrist. You'll see foot. If you go to the OB, there's a word, right? The V word. You don't hear it at all. It gets ellipsed. People go like, let's take a look, scooch down, let's take a look, right? That sort of leaps out at you that the body part being examined is not named. Only if you have the transcript, because then you can count it and you can go, out of 50 visits that we've recorded, there are zero instances of this word. That's amazing, right? Whereas in the cardiology visits, there's 500. That kind of stuff you can only do with a transcript when you want to quantify frequency of appearance and when you want to draw conclusions from that, right? And that is helpful. So it's not totally useless, but if you're just trying to judge how people feel about things based on the transcripts, they're misleading. So that's worse than useless. That's the part that's worse than useless.
Yeah. And I would also say that, you know, from like a lexicon standpoint and like certain terms that are used over others. So like something that just comes to mind, like in the vaccine space, you know, do we call it a vaccine? Do we call it a shot? How are people talking about it? So when you're comparing kind of words that can be used synonymously and we want to see which ones are used more. And I would also think like from like a prioritization standpoint, so if we feel like a certain treatment has certain benefits and we want to see which ones kind of come to mind most readily or have the biggest influence on a prescribing decision, we could kind of skim that like a transcript to see like, okay, well, what's being answered or said first as, you know, a benefit and being able to draw the conclusion of,
So order of mention.
Order of mention. Exactly.
It sort of indicates perceptual salience, right? That's a fancy way of saying that the order you say things in can be indicative of how important they are to you, kind of stuff like that. But we can also prime that. And this is why you started out by saying this is the sort of flip side of bad discussion guides. It is. When you look at transcripts and you see people going, how do you feel about the initiation of insulin? What you're likely to get back is the words initiation of insulin, right? You've primed the vocabulary there. And so we tend to be very guilty of priming our respondents to use the language that we're comfortable with. And this is why when we talked about the discussion guides, we said open-ended questions are better. Solicit their vocabulary and then mirror it back to them. Let them prime you. So like, how do you feel about, you know, the overall approach to preventing COVID? What are the main tools for that, right? I don't want to use the word immunization or vaccination because I want to hear what they come back with, right? And so the main tool is immunization. Good. Yep. Now I know that's how they refer to it. So I go like, well, let's talk immunization. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Like that's something that you get trained very extensively in trying not to ruin the site, as they say, to seed the discussion with what you use as vocabulary. And that you can actually see in transcripts because they're sequential. So a good transcript will show you where you messed up a little bit procedurally and gave them language that came back to you. But that's why something like medieval is so interesting, because you go back in the transcript and you go like, nope, I did not refer to the Middle Ages in any way. So that is absolutely his spontaneous word. So So again, look, I'm not trying to be fussy. I think people can be very fussy about research. I'm being very clear. I think people misread transcripts all the time. I think it's because they're absent most of the really important data about how people feel about what they're saying and how firmly they feel it and how easy it was for them to produce it. So yeah, if you just rely on the transcripts, you are getting a keyhole view that is potentially quite misleading.
Mm-hmm. Love it. All right. Well, with that is our discussion on transcripts, how to use them, how not to use them. And hopefully we can approach reviewing transcripts a little differently. I mean, I know that I will. So thanks, Brad.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just be careful, right? I mean, again, yeah. I think transcripts are useful, just they're not the whole picture. And with that, man, picture. I think we've beaten up transcripts enough.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. Thanks so much. Thanks, everyone. Until next time. Sneaker. Bye.
Breaking the Code is a podcast by Havas Health and Hughes Medical Anthropology Department. Created and produced by Brad Davidson and Sneaky Garcia. Content editing done by Catherine Rossi. Post-production audio editing done by Gabriel Allen Cummings. And inspiration by all of you. Thanks for listening and your continued support. If you enjoy these episodes, we would love to hear from you. Please leave a rating and subscribe. Until next time.